We get things underway in this second hour by saying hello to our friend Colin Fleming to create Easter soup. Hello, Colin.
Hey, what's up, Kimball?
You referred to it on Twitter as Marx Brothers, but with a duo. I'm assuming you're Groucho. If I'm Harpo, I couldn't be heard. So am I Gummo?
I feel like a guy like you represents all the Marx Brothers equally. You're like some Kimball-esque hybrid.
I don't know. If I'm any Marx, it's probably Carl.
Well, going by some of your social media posts, perhaps that could be that could indeed be true.
goodness! So Easter and so many things that we want to talk about. I will take them in the order in which you tweeted them. We can jump around later. Let's begin with Cadbury eggs.
Cadbury eggs, and we've probably talked about this before because I really like, in one way, Cadbury eggs. Are you yourself a Cadbury egg fan?
I love the Cadbury egg.
You actually enjoy the ingesting of the egg.
I
do. You like the taste and everything. Okay. See, I'm somebody who I think I like it a lot more conceptually, and I get really into it. And I stockpile them because they last for eons, like that Rankin Bass special with the old Eon, like that crazy vulture dude, kind of like the candy version of that. Like you could find them in the hold of a ship, like a submarine or something like that, if you were down deep below and you could survive off of them. But I eat them, and then I immediately, pretty early on, I regret it because it's like it's dense, right? But
oh,
the densest candy ever made.
And I only like them around this time of year. Like if you give me one of those well-preserved Cadbury eggs in the summertime, I will pass on that. It's an Easter time treat, and that density is going to be too much for me in the heat of summer.
I remember when they first came out, I was a little kid, and the commercials were on, and they had that multicolored tinfoil, right, for the
yes.
wrapping. And just when I see like that tinfoil candy wrapper of like the little Easter eggs too, right, the non-Cadbury egg ones and the Christmas ones, doesn't that just kind of put with this horrific second grade teacher I once had called warm fuzzies in your heart? Like, don't you just kind of smile and think, okay, this is good. This is something that I like that is puts me in a good humor, relatively speaking, at least. And they had those commercials come on with that bunny would come out and he'd do his little routine and make his little bunny sounds. And I just thought it was like this new age kind of candy technology. Like, it blew my mind that the egg had been approximated in chocolate form. And I can watch those commercials even on YouTube. And like, I go back to, I feel like, better times in the world. A guy like you is probably living at large, is college, Kimball. And you were snacking on them and I was doing a different thing with them too. But like, I don't know. I just, they have that sort of candy purity to me, even though they're so dense and calorically horrific.
Right. But because of our little insignificant age difference, you're right, I was older at the time, so I don't get the childhood flashbacks with the Cadbury eggs. For me, it's those, well, those hollow chocolate rabbits, it's jelly beans, and it's, I don't even know if they make this because I'm sure it's horrible for the environment, but the awful green plastic grass that my mom or my grandma would always put in my Easter basket.
Oh, I would love that. Like it was sourced from the Astrodome or something.
Right,
like that.
Yes, yes.
That Cadbury egg to me is sort of like those SATs when they have like the this is to this, is that is to that. It's to Easter as like the Sears catalog when I was a kid was to Christmas, which sounds like such an antiquated notion now that you would have, because the Sears catalog was something that probably existed right in like the 19th century when Sears was, you order your gun. So you could go hunt like the rabbit and make the stew up there in Maine or whatever. But it's like, even with the candy rabbits, I was thinking about them too. It's are you a hollow candy rabbit guy or are you a solid body rabbit dude?
I think even though the chocolate is better with the solid chocolate, if I'm looking for the trip back to childhood, then give me that hollow bunny so I can break off an ear and just start mowing on it.
It's more workable. Because, again, conceptually, I fall for the solid body rabbit. It's almost like you're Eric Clapton, like the Fender solid body guitar. The solid body rabbit. Even though, like, you're gnawing on that thing, and, like, its ears become like a dog bone, right? At the
end. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like all sort of like mangly and just kind of, what was that? Oh, it's Fido's bone out there in the backyard. And you're working that hunk for a while, Kibble. And because you don't take down the solid body rabbit in one go. I mean, no matter who you are, you can be like Captain Glutton. And you're still not going to just, it's such a workout for the mouth, for that old mandible. It's like doing reps.
Now, we have probably discussed this before. Where do you stand on the controversial subject of peeps?
Peeps are, I like to see them. It's like, oh, okay, the peeps are out. That's nice. Nice to be able to observe at the CVS. But I've never really been into them as, I'm just not like a mallow kind of guy.
Yeah.
The whole marshmallow thing. It's one of those things that I feel like you're either really well into or you're not into at all. To me, also like fireworks are that way. And that's just kind of like the candy version of them. Like to me, you have it once, you see it once, and I'm pretty much good to go. But I was reading like the ingredients, for instance, for like jelly beans last night. It was like 11 o'clock. I was powering through some of these beans, hoping to maybe get a little magic rub off type of thing going here. And you read the ingredients for jelly beans. It's one of those foods, candies, where you think, how on earth could this be popular? It says, like, mostly made of sugar with some dye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, what's more basic than that? It's like pouring some kind of coloring into a paste that is, like, 90% sugar, and yet they are really the candy staple, the long-lasting candy staple, I feel like, of Easter. And they've managed to make their inroads, too, into popular culture. He took the band like the Beatles. And in England, they were called Jelly Babies. And George Harrison was such a fan of what we call jelly beans that he had mentioned this in an interview. And the Teeny Boppers would show up at their gigs and pelt the Beatles, like blind them with these jelly beans. And it happened in the States, too. So finally, they had to put out like a statement saying, like, please keep your jelly beans to yourself. But it's just like one of those foods too where you think like I don't know what it like does to like your inner, I mean, when you eat them you don't think like you're really doing something great for yourself.
No,
I wanted to make sure my consumption last night was completed before midnight, so I wasn't like crossing that threshold and it's like, dude, you started your day with like 18 jelly beans, like you didn't really expect today to go well even for you, did you? So but I like all of the Easter kind of candies. I like the brightness and those colors, and I like what they symbolize to me, and they get me in the mood for what I think is probably my second favorite holiday, really. I mean, I really like Easter, and I'm someone who likes Easter throughout the year. It's not just like a kind of like April thing for me.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Let's move into the world of Easter music. And most people probably, maybe they're aware, but probably not, that Handel's Messiah was originally designed to be an Easter celebration.
It was, yes. And it's become what people associate with Christmas, which is, I really can't like reason that out if you actually know the music. Like it's, besides its heraldic celebratory nature. It certainly works for Christmas, but it's really like a triple album. It's like a classical musical triple album of the life of Christ. So it's not just like, it doesn't start with the whole manger scene. Like you're pretty deep into things at that point. So you're getting the whole up there on the cross and the resurrection and the condemnation and all of these sort of biographical details, which I think really dovetail well, that's a good word, for Easter. It just goes with the holiday. And so that was what Handel actually had in mind when he was writing this music. He wasn't thinking, okay, I'm doing this, like Dickens when he wrote A Christmas Carol, obviously was trying to go for this big seller that would just ratchet up the sales every year come like December 1st. That's not how Handel was looking at Messiah.
You mentioned Coltrane. What are we talking? Love Supreme?
Yeah, to me, it's a two-pronged kind of Coltrane, because you don't really associate Coltrane, although I think we should, with Easter, because it's so immensely, passionately spiritual, an album first, like Love Supreme, and then its companion record, although it's so very different, in Ascension. From the next year. I mean, think about like what Easter really is. And if we just go back to kind of its origins, this idea of this happens to this person, this murder. They sort of come back after they've been taken away. And then for 40 days, they don't really, like, go up to heaven quite yet. Like, there's a lot to do. There's a lot on Christ's to-do list. He has to go down for the so-called harrowing of hell and, like, pluck out everyone who was there because they were born before, like, they could not be a pagan, essentially. And so he has a lot to get done before that actual ascension. And when I think about that ascension, or the concept of an ascension having a sound, because I think when you have an ascension, it's not like you've come from a rosy place. I think it's you overcoming quite a bit. And that, to me, is that intense motoric sound of the Ascension album. And people talk about The Love Supreme as the best the Coltrane ever did, his alleged masterpiece. But I don't think, religion pun, it holds a candle to Ascension, which is as intense as any jazz music, I mean, really kind of any music I've ever heard. To sit down and listen to that entire performance, which was hugely intimidating, too, for some of the players. Like, somebody begged out of the session saying, I can't play this. This is way too technically demanding. And it's not like he was going down to the AA ranks to recruit people to be a part of this music making. But you needed somebody like a Freddie Hubbard on trumpet who holds his own with Coltrane. I mean, for this guy who, we don't talk about him a lot. We talk about, like, Dizzy Gillespie as a trumpet player or Louis Armstrong. Freddie Hubbard is, like, the most versatile jazz musician. He's up there. Eric Dolphy is another. Of that entire 1960s decade. And Ascension, I think, is just one of the great trumpet statements ever made, but it's enclosed within this other statement of everything else that Coltrane has going on.
When you talk about the Beatles and Easter, to me, there's one song that I always associate with the holiday. I'm not sure which one you're thinking of. For me, it's always the obvious, Here Comes the Sun.
I'm thinking of the Beatles in terms of, because Handel's Messiah is really like his White Album. You have all of these things just kind of jammed in there that would seem disparate. Like, but it worked as a, if not a cohesive whole, at least songs, because that's really what Messiah is, that belong together. Here Comes the Sun, and I'm not someone who's a part of this whole sort of retroactive George Harrison renaissance that we've had in the last few years, where he was just as talented as Lennon and McCartney. It's like, no, he wasn't. We don't always have to force a revision of history that's just not there. But he had a couple of, I wouldn't call them doozies, because like the whole ranking of NHL players, top 100 players of all time, like where does something like Something or Here Comes the Sun, where do they rank? I mean, like top 50, like probably, or whatever it is. But that's such a vernal sound, Here Comes the Sun, right from that opening kind of guitar, that acoustic guitar. And usually when you had acoustic guitar on a Beatles song, it was coming from Lennon. It wasn't coming from Harrison as often. I mean, And I Love Her has that acoustic guitar solo, but that's Harrison. But this is sort of him very much in sun-splashed, early April, we're approaching Easter-type mode. And Harrison was a very spiritual, of course, person. His spirituality stemmed in large part from the East, which we don't really associate with Easter. But there's so much, ironically, but there's so much kind of overlap, I feel like, with the whole notion of rebirth. And rebirth isn't just about, oh, I'm dead, now I'm back. Rebirth is a much more diurnal concept, I would say, when we master what the potentialities of rebirth are asking of us. And that's very much a song in that kind of mode.
From music, we move to CinemaScope. And I don't know, for me, for many years as a kid, perhaps for you, it was all about watching the Ten Commandments. And for me, the best part of that was always Edward G. Robinson.
There's a boatload of films like that, right? I remember going to, like, the grandmother's house, and there were going to be these films that would just be on all day long. And they were all in, like, this, behold, look at our mighty color, right? They were more coloristic than actual, like, color. Like, the world, Hammer horror films did this to a degree, where the colors would be sort of like a hyper-reality of reality. but not like the religious epics of the 1950s in CinemaScope. And it's like when some of these directors or producers or film studios got their hands on CinemaScope, they just would not let this bad boy technology go. They were going to flog every last kind of coloristic morsel out of it. And these films would be on. I was thinking, like, even though they're so bright and vibrant and all that, I remember thinking, like, this is dreary. Because it starts off promising. You walk in the middle of it, and there are, like, some Roman centurions, and they're doing stuff with the swords and the sandals. You're like, all right, let's do this. And then before you know it, it's like, oh, this is like being in church. I'm hearing the same lines and everything, man. And it's like, oh, you too, Pontius Pilate? You're supposed to be like Darth Vader. You're the villain of the piece. Let's, like, get a sword, man. Get in on this. And they just seemed to last, and they probably did because of commercials. Every film was on for 5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
So you were just, like, strapped in with, I mean, Ten Commandments. But there were so many of them. It's like this genre. And CinemaScope was used for Westerns, but they seemed to help out Westerns in a way. They didn't make them feel like they had these langours. They didn't make them feel kind of like the visual experience of watching, like, that density of the Cadbury egg. Whereas CinemaScope, with these epics, and I just was never, I don't really have any straight-up religious films where I'm like, this is one of my favorite things to watch. Like, really, like, any of them. It's pretty much something, I mean, I've seen them all and everything, of course, because of what I do. But I, so many religious puns today. I passed them by.
Ah, very nice. Now, of all the things that you listed, this was the one that stumped me. Martians.
Oh, yes. Good thing you reminded me. I think the best ever Easter film involves Martians. I think it's The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Ah, okay. I like that. Yes.
It's completely a resurrection parable.
Right.
And it's something, it's probably too late for this year. Maybe I can do it next year. It's not bad. Precisely this idea that it is the best Easter film, because you get such this sag and this bloat and this Faustian quality with all of the actual religious epics, but this kind of like straight arrow spirituality, which speaks to the every person, is found to me in The Day the Earth Stood Still. And also, it's a valuable lesson for right now, because these Martians, these aliens, are like, hey, trying to do you a good turn. And Earth people suck so much. They're like, no, I hate you. Let's have at them. And that's really kind of how we are. I feel like we attack first and we ask questions, not at all, let alone later. And we attack in these really cowardly ways. Like, for instance, I'm sure you saw these videos or know of these videos of the subway attack, right?
From yes.
Yesterday. And the 65-year-old woman going to church and the people just onlooking. Isn't it like amazing? Just like watching. And I was reading all of these excuses from people, too, saying, I don't want to be accused of racism, or you don't know what people are going to do. I thought to myself, like, you're the same person who's sitting in the keyboard, logging on Twitter and telling everyone how good you are because you've done this kind of thing, and yet your behavior is every bit different, but it's every bit as barbarous as the attack. And so you have these people who sort of passively let things go to pieces within this film, and then you have these humans who turn on these other entities who are doing them a good turn. And it's, to me, like, such the notion of that we, when we attack others, we ultimately attack ourselves. And I think that's really kind of one of the big messages of Easter itself. And then also that notion of forgiveness, or if not of forgiveness, still trying to help those who will hurt us. I mean, we've spoken about this. The older I get, I feel like that's more and more the point of life. And how good you are is directly proportionate to how much you're willing to help other people. And by other people, I mean anyone. I don't just mean like your spouse or your kid or your father or whatever like that. Just anyone. So I think that's really a good film to sort of get that Easter idea across.
Kind of the message of the season in many ways. And Colin, what is the most important commodity in the world?
The most important commodity in the world. It sounds like that's just going to be some kind of like grandiloquent statement. Like, nobody can actually answer what that is. But it's not love. And I think I have a life right now where there is no love. It's not connection. I don't really have that either right now. All these things that I think I don't have and that other people probably have, maybe to some degree, and other people might also not have it all. If you're out there and you've been in that situation, you know that there's been nothing worse for you than on the days when you've awoken and you've not had hope. There is nothing in this world that is more precious to us. People say it's time. It's not. It's hope. Hope is the root of moving forward. And it sounds like a contradiction of terms, because, like, how could a root have anything to do with propulsion? If you don't have the hope that you're going to have whatever it is, whether it is that connection, whether it is that love, when you take hope away from somebody, or you can't find a way to manufacture a degree of hope, and it doesn't have to be a lot, like, okay, if I do this, well, I'm hopeful that things are just going to be awesome come next Tuesday. You need the shaving of hope, at least. You need to at least have that. And I think ultimately, that's why I care about Easter so much. Christmas is the holiday of fellowship. And I like to think that people are kinder to each other. And I mean, they're not, and I understand that. But it's the holiday of fellowship. Easter is the holiday encapsulation of hope, of rising again. And it's not like even a religious thing. It's not like, oh, I went to church and Palm Sunday, all that stuff. It's rising again in your way, underline that, in your own life, which is everything that Easter is oriented around.
Well said, my friend. By the way, I may have figured out why you and I get along so well, and I think it's this, that I also appreciate and often use, whether other people appreciate as much as I do or not, the Charlie Brown greeting cards.
It's funny. I sent holiday cards today to my nephew and my two little nieces. And I think we've mentioned this before. They are not into peanuts. I wrote on the blog. You probably saw it on the blog.
Yeah.
I made note of this, and I said, perhaps it's time to judge the children harshly. And then I added that I was joking. But still, though, right? Like, I mean, I'm kind of like giving you like a nudge and a wink. But again, you have to wonder what's going on there. But you go to the CVS, and you want to get some holiday cards, and you see that the peanuts, it's like a 1930s mob film. Like, they have a monopoly. like Snoopy is like rubbing people out.
Oh, yeah.
It's like Charlie Brown looks on. I'm thinking, like, these kids, you can't. But I mean, in all honesty, Easter Beagle, how can you not be into, like, peanuts? I mean, you don't have to like all the characters. Like, I find Lucy, frankly, a bit much.
Sure.
But between, like, Charlie Brown, Snoopy, I mean, Snoopy's a dick. Let's be honest. He really is. Like, he could be in with, he's like that guy in Withnail, and he's like Withnail and Withnail and I. But, like, Linus, how can you not, there's something for you if you're, like, that bossy, kind of, like, problematic, has to have her way, neighborhood kid. You get Peppermint Patty eventually, mm-hmm. and she's suggestive of candy. These kids, I mean, I don't know, because it's certainly not boring, so whatever. So they got them some, like, Easter ducks. Enjoy it, children.
I'm with you. I question character at some point along the way. Colin, we appreciate it. As always, hope your Easter is fulfilling. We look forward to getting together with you once again next week.
All right, sounds good.
Colin Fleming on Downtown. Check out his website, colinflemminglit.com.